Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show was Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, going solo today. So Andrew's missing. He must be off to Amsterdam. But we got Joey G, our engineer, in the booth today. Hey, Joe. Well, he's micless Joe today.
I'm here.
Oh, there's Joe. The show is broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5. And we'd love to hear from you while we're streaming live. You can call us at 718-497-2128 or send Joey an email, and he'll read the email online on air. It's info at heritageradionetwork.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you can't listen to us while we're streaming live, every show is is archived on the website, or you can download a free podcast through iTunes. So there's no excuse for not here listening to Flash Talks Cash. Today we're talking about what I think is a very important case going on. It's the how healthy or sick is the Supreme Court. We're going to be talking about the health care bill, the Obama bill, Obamacare, and what the Supreme Court is doing with it. It's probably pretty important legislation going on right now. When we look back over this time, if it gets approved, they'll say, oh, well, you know, it went through all sorts of gyrations and caused all sorts of grief, and hopefully it'll be successful. And if it doesn't get passed, it could be the upcoming campaign for the rest of this year for this presidential election in November. So it's very, very, very interesting what's going on. And it's so interesting that people are lined up this week to sit in the courtroom and listen to it. It's quite unusual. It doesn't usually happen. Most people don't go to the Supreme Court hearings and listen to it because it goes on and on for days. And, you know, it's a case that doesn't impact directly most Americans, but this, you know, most Supreme Court cases, but this one does, and it's very interesting. So it could start a new law or squash the law that maybe I think this country needs. Now you know how I feel about it. I do believe in national health care. I think the insurance companies and the medical profession is in shambles, and we are suffering, we being the American people, when we have the best technology and we have the most educated and brightest scientists and doctors in this country, but we have to pay ridiculous amounts. And then it's unaffordable to people, some people in this country. It's like if you're wealthy or you're working, you can afford insurance. But if you're unemployed or you're not rich, you can be left on the side of the road. It's not okay. So let's talk about what's going on over the past 3 days. They finished discussing the case in court. Now the justices are going to go into their chambers and discuss it for the next few months. And the decision will arrive in June, which is a long way off. I think that's a long time to decide this, but I guess they have to explore all different parts of this and decide and make a law that's going to work for the majority of the people. So what's going on? There's a couple of things that I learned this week, which I never knew. You know, I'm still learning how this works. And I never really went into the Obama healthcare plan when he put it out back 3 years ago. It was, you know, it was kind of legal, and, you know, most of us don't really know what was included in it. It wasn't going to go into effect till 2014, so we had lots of time to learn about it. But these are the things that I do know about it today. There's one of the terms that came out is this individual mandate, and that's what a lot of the discussion is about and a lot of the disagreement. And an individual mandate is that you the plan or the law would force Americans to have to buy insurance or you pay a penalty. So that's the individual mandate, which is a big part of the dissension, and it's oftentimes political. It's a bipartisan kind of a situation. The Republicans claim that that's illegal to force people to buy insurance. However, I don't see the difference. If you own a car, you have to buy car insurance. So it's kind of the same. But, you know, they claim, well, that's a state law and that's not a federal law. And then one of the justices, as we all heard this week, said, well, if somebody decides in the federal government that we all have to eat broccoli to be healthy, is broccoli then become a mandate where everybody has to buy broccoli? I mean, it's kind of extreme example, but that's what's going on. So that's the individual mandate, which is causing a lot of the grief. And there's also a new term that's come out of this. It's called the debt spiral. And the debt spiral is if this plan doesn't pass and the individual mandate is squashed. This is when this debt spiral will happen, and this is when more and more healthy people stop buying plans, and only the expensive patients are left. So people who get insurance at work would mostly be untouched because they already are in a large pool, and they share the risk of their medical expenses. So they have reasonable price plans. And for individuals and families who buy insurance on their own and small businesses, it's another story. This is where it gets to be too expensive, and people will opt out of the insurance, and then the sick people are left, the very sick people, and you know, whether they choose to buy insurance or give up all their assets and go on to Medicaid, which is government-sponsored health care. You know, it's a tough situation to be in. And so this debt spiral is a potential that the people who are in the insurance industry are complaining about. So, you know, there's things that are going on, such as employer-sponsored insurance plans. You know, I think that those are eventually going to be defunct. They're going to be, someday we're going to say, oh, remember when you used to go to work and you used to get an insurance plan? That's not going to happen. I think, this is just my opinion, over time, it's too expensive for employers to pay for this. It's a very big perk that they pay for, and you know, as they've done with pension plans through the years, they've now put the burden onto the employees. They're going to more and more, and it's happening more and more, the burden of the health insurance costs are falling onto the employees. I could never understand why health insurance has to be tied into employment. I could never understand what those two have to do with it. I know how it happened. It happened, you know, years ago when the unions were strong and they pushed the employers for fringe benefits, and one of them was paid insurance. However, I don't see where a person who is not employed for whatever reason, for all sorts of reasons, does not deserve to get health insurance, or if they choose to get health insurance, then they have to pay these astronomical prices. I am in a position now at this stage of my life where there are quite a few people of my colleagues and friends and associates that I know who are interested in cutting back, going part-time, retiring, semi-retiring, or launching their own business after all these years of working in corporate America or in their present jobs. And they can't leave because they're at the age where they're not quite old enough to get Medicare. They're in their late 50s, early 60s. So they're forced to stay in their jobs, and they have to continue working until 65 when they're eligible then to collect Medicare, because to buy a personal insurance plan is just expensive. So I think that, you know, if they made it where you can call up Allstate or call up State Farm Insurance or whoever, Travelers, and compare prices, that might really work for this country, and as long as it's reasonable. You know, that would free up a lot of jobs that the young people could take, because there are a lot of people sitting in jobs that would gladly leave their jobs, and then it would open up doors for young people to be able to take some jobs. So that's part of the thing that I think is really important about getting this health care nationalized or reasonable. Now, this national social plan, I don't think is a bad plan. By the way, Andrew's here. Say hi, Andrew. No, Andrew's not talking?
You left me out to dry last week. I'm just going to sit here and look at you. Make sure you do okay.
I didn't leave you out to dry. You had a plan.
I did not. There was no plan.
Your plan.
There was no plan. You know what? This isn't a one-man thing here. And you know what? I'm going to let you feel it. Go.
I've done that before without you. So Andrew's going to sit there and he's going to put his he puts his headphones on and he's going to read his text messages or his whatever he's doing. He's reading his iPhone. And he's just sitting there, just torturing me. But he does that regularly, as you know. Back to my thing about socialized medicine. You know, I don't understand how we can pull this off. As we all know, every industrial nation in the Western Hemisphere has socialized medicine, some form, yet we can't do it. We do have socialized medicine for retirees. It's called Medicare. And I don't understand why we can't extend a program, something like that, to work for the rest of us. What is going to happen, and it's happening now, is that the pool of people buying the insurance are the very sick people, the needy people, the prices are high. And the young people who are relatively healthy and take a chance that they're not going to need health insurance are not participating. And those are the people that support the sickly people. You need the premiums from healthy people to offset all the expenses from the sick people. So if this doesn't stop, over time, you're going to have fewer and fewer healthy people buying insurance, and it's going to be even more outrageously expensive and more difficult for the Americans to pay for insurance. What's going on with the Supreme Court? So they left it now at the decision is, should we keep this individual mandate in the Obamacare program, or should we decline it? And if we keep it in, if we keep it in, we approve it and we pass it. But if we decline it, do we decline just that piece, or do we decline the whole bill and let them go back to the drawing board and start all over again? This is interesting. I thought it was interesting to hear their perspective on this. I have a couple of quotes from the different justices to tell you where it's going. By the way, the prediction is that this is going to go 5-4, just as all the other decisions have gone, and it's straight down the party lines. And of course, the Republicans have a majority on the Supreme Court bench. So it looks, the prediction is, it's only a prediction. They have until June, and they're gonna have to go through all this. But they predict that it's going to fail. But anyway, so they're deciding whether this mandate is really the hot button. And so Justice Scalia wants to know if he should separate the mandate from the whole bill. And he says he can't divorce the realities of the political process in Washington, which he says is beset by legislative inertia. So he's saying, you know, if we pull out the mandate and leave the rest of the bill, these bums in Washington, they can't seem to pass anything or get anything through. So he's not signing on for that. He says, my approach would say if you take the heart of the statute's gone. So he's saying the mandate goes, the whole law goes. He says you're not going to get 60 votes in the Senate to repeal the rest. So, you know, he says it's not going to go past in the law. Justice Breyer at one point seemed to agree that the Supreme Court is not well suited to editing the balance of the law should the mandate fall. So he says it's not going to work. We can't go through it and figure out what's passable and what we should have to pull out. He wants to stay out of politics. That's for Congress, not for the Supreme Court. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's a feisty young Democrat. Young is a funny word for her. She says deciding between a wrecking operation and a salvage job, the more conservative approach would be to salvage rather than throw everything out. So she's interested in looking through and seeing what can be pulled out. And, you know, it's a practical approach. Why are we going to reinvent the whole wheel? There's lots of parts in there that will work. So she's willing to look at it and itemize it and see what's salvageable. Justice Sotomayor suggested it would be too broad an assertion of judicial power to strike down the whole law. So she's kind of interested in hanging in there and picking up the pieces. Justice Kennedy said it would be judicial overreaching to leave parts of the law intact in light of the obligations it would continue to impose on insurance companies. I don't think that he's the guy who's going to want to pass this mandate. He's worried about the insurance companies. I'm not worried about the insurance companies. Justices wondered about their own competence to undertake a salvage job. And here's one. Justice Scalia said, you really want us to go through these 2,700 pages? That's pretty unrealistic, he says. And that we're going to go through this enormous bill and decide item by item and decide each one. That's not happening. So he's not willing to take on that job. And so, you know, the justices are kind of leaning already by their questions, but you can't say that's it. They have their opinions, but they're going to have to do their research and come back in a and tell us what they thought for the next few months in June. So we're going to take a break now. We'll be back in a minute, and we'll continue talking about this health care law. We'll be right back.
He's getting old. Kids are different today. I hear every mother say, mother needs something today to calm her down. And though she's not really ill, there's a little yellow pill. She goes running for the shelter of her mother's little helper, and it helps her on her way, gets her through her
busy
day.
This program was sponsored by White Oak Pastures. The Harris family has lived and farmed White Oak Pastures for 145 years. They are committed to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. Their mission? We take care of the land and the herd, and they take care of us. For more information about their cattle and their farm, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
There's no helper, and to help her on her way, get her through her busy day.
Okay, Flash Talks Cash. We're back. We're talking about how healthy or sick is the Supreme Court.
I think it's fine. I think the law is unconstitutional.
Well,
it's unconstitutional.
But is the whole thing gets thrown out, or
that's the, you know,
that's the part they have
all
to talk
things about. All laws go through judicial review, as you know.
Yes.
So in order for a law to become on the books, it has to go through the Supreme Court, and they can't approve something that's making health insurance mandatory, imposing that on the people.
Well, what about Medicare? How did they get that through?
That's not imposed on the people.
Yes, it is. If you're 65, you go on Medicare. Your insurance company no longer covers you. You go on Medicare.
Okay.
And so, you know,
Whatever.
Well, it's not. It's, you know, if
you're just taking care of old people at that point. I don't like that there either.
Okay.
That's because there were people coming back from fighting the war that they then put together Social Security and Medicare to take care of these people who are living longer. That's why that's there, because people are stupid and they can't take care of themselves.
What about when you own a car, you have to get car insurance?
I think it's crap as well. I hate insurance. Insurance should not be a legal mandated thing, because you're hedging your bet. All you're doing is hedging your bet.
Right.
Let the free market take its.
Well, what happens if you crash into somebody's car?
As I've said before, if you can't afford it, don't do it. And you have to look at the ramifications of what you're doing.
Well, listen, let me say something. You can't afford. Okay, so I have $10,000 in my savings account. So in case I get in an accident, I have up to $10,000 to pay for an accident. However, suppose I hit a pedestrian and their medical bills are $50,000. What do I do then?
That's not practical. You're on the hook.
That's not practical in a civilized world. It's not practical.
Why don't you just take care of yourself and not run over somebody?
Well, okay. That's called an accident. Can we talk about the health care? I have a little bit more.
I don't like insurance.
Okay, but I have a little bit more to talk about. I have a little bit more to talk about. There is this guy who kind of was, is now the guy who draws up these health care bills. He was called on, and this is very interesting. You know, Mitt Romney is in a very precarious situation because, as we all know, as the governor of Massachusetts, he imposed mandatory health care for every resident of Massachusetts. And if you did get health care insurance, you pay a penalty.
That's crap.
Well, it's what
that's
he passed.
That's unconstitutional.
Frankly,
that is unconstitutional. You cannot make me do something I don't want to do.
Move out of the state.
I wouldn't live there.
Okay. But he passed it. And actually, it's a very successful law. And the people have been buying insurance, and the insurance prices are not ridiculous, and it's actually been very successful.
It's keeping poor people poor.
So his name is Jonathan Gruber. He's the one who drew up this Massachusetts plan. After that, he was called on by other states, California, Connecticut, Delaware, Kansas, and he worked with these states to help draw up the plans, though they didn't pull them off. Any one of the states didn't get that. But, you know, when Obama was running for election back in 2008, one of his first things he wanted to do was pass a health care reform bill, and he called on this guy, Jonathan Gruber, and they used the template for the Massachusetts law for the federal law. as you could see, it has problems that Massachusetts didn't encounter, but the federal government is encountering. But what I find very interesting is Mitt Romney is really not being very outspoken about this health care, because I think he's, you know, he can't say he doesn't agree with it when he went and did the exact same thing Obama is trying to do. So I find it very interesting. And finally, the decision is going to impact the election. Obama is going to have to campaign one way if it passes, a different way if it fails. And Mitt Romney, or whoever the Republican is going to, if it fails, and it's probably going to fail, the Republicans are going to use it against Obama, to say what a poor leader he was, what a lousy president he is. He can't even write a good bill, and he can't appease the Americans, because most Americans don't want this bill. So they're going to use it as political fire against him, and this campaign is going to get heated up. I think the Republican convention is in August. So the Republicans, you know, collectively are going to, kind of stay quiet until the decision comes out. They're going to fight amongst themselves. But come August, whoever wins, and it's probably going to be Mitt Romney, right? Who knows? So between Romney and Obama, they're going to use this decision as a campaign fodder. I don't know. So that's it on the Supreme Court. Let's hear. We'll report back in June when they make their decision, and we'll be back on that topic. I hope they come up with a good decision. So now we're going to go to Number Nuts. We have some Number Nuts. Let's hear some Number Nuts music. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh, it's good to hear Number Nuts. I have an interesting Number Nuts for my boys in the studio today. As you all know, I was in Amsterdam last week, and no, I didn't smoke pot. But, because you don't need to go to Amsterdam to smoke pot. You smoke pot anywhere in the world, especially in Brooklyn, right? It's easy. So I wasn't interested. But I did find what I found absolutely fascinating was the red light district, you know. I had to go see it because I was intrigued by how these women stand in these storefronts and how this works. So I have a couple of questions for my boys. Let's ask, and Joey G, cut the music so we can talk to you and you can answer us. How about it? There we go.
All right, I'm here.
Good. So I'm going to give you some really basic historical questions, and then you guys are going to answer the meaty questions, all right?
All right.
So the prostitution was legalized in the Netherlands in 1810. They've been doing it for over 200 years, right?
Well, no, people have been doing it for a lot longer.
No, legalized, okay? And brothels were legalized in the year 2000.
Weren't they legal in the U.S. too?
Yeah, way back in the day.
Yeah I'm saying. So what the hell's the difference?
Okay.
What's so intriguing here?
Well, watch this.
This is crap. This is all crap perpetrated by you.
So what's the percentage of the Dutch public that claims to have no problem whatsoever with prostitution? Is the number 48%, 78%, or 98%?
78.
Yeah, I'm going to go that one too.
78? Oh, you guys are smart. You would know your prostitution questions. Okay, what's the percentage of working prostitutes that were born in the Netherlands? Is it 5%, 50%, or 95%?
5%.
Five and five? You both said five?
Yep.
Oh, you guys know your prostitution answers, don't you? Good answer. Estimated percentage of prostitutes working illegally in the Netherlands.
How is that possible?
I don't know. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, if you're not in the red light district, I guess you're illegal,
you need,
right?
A card or something?
Well, I don't know. Street card? Walkers? I don't know. Well, there is. I'm going to tell you some more information. So the estimated percentage of prostitutes working illegally in the Netherlands is less than 5%. Okay, so I guess they all register and all sorts of stuff.
Sign up.
Yeah, I'm saying.
Okay, here we go, boys. Let's see how smart you really are. You do know about the red light district.
Are you going to break it down with some pricing?
Average rental cost per window paid by the prostitute. And it's a range. So give me your best estimate what you think they pay per 8-hour shift. And it's dependent on the location. You know, it's real estate. Location, location, location. What do you think they pay for that window per 8-hour shift?
U.S. dollars?
Well, you could give me in dollars. I have it in euros. But you could give me either one. I'll convert.
$2,000.
$2,000?
I'm going to say $5,000.
$5,000 for 8 hours?
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are not even close. No, 75 to 150 euros.
That's it?
Yeah, well, 75 to 150, which is, you know, maybe it's $100 to $200 a night. How much you pay for a hotel room? A motel room.
Yeah, but this is like prime real estate.
I'm saying
here.
You're talking about markup here.
Yeah,
you're
but 2,000. Who makes $2,000 a shift?
She's probably bank. Probably all right. Well, I'm looking at this right.
I'm thinking cream of the crop.
I'm getting pretty graphic. Here we go. Here we go.
No.
Am I gonna have to go back and edit
probably
this?
Probably about $100 for a blowjob.
No, you're wrong. I'm going to give you that information.
I never thought I'd have this conversation with my mother.
You are?
I never thought I'd have this conversation.
Can we finish?
Thanks. Go. I'm excited.
Okay. Typical base course for sex, also known as a quickie.
A quickie.
A quickie.
$50.
I'm going to say 150.
Well, it's 50 euros, so maybe it's like $75.
$75.
Okay.
Sorry.
So the typical duration of an encounter with a prostitute, how many minutes? How
7
how long?
Minutes.
4 minutes.
Well, boys, you're too young. 15 minutes. 15 what, minutes
for a quickie?
For yeah, average duration. Yep. Okay.
Wait, is I guess
a lot of TLC going on?
Apparently, yeah, a lot of foreplay going on there.
Okay. So, nation that provides the most clients.
U.S.
The U.S. What do you say, Joey G?
I want to say U.S. as well.
Well, it's Great Britain.
I guess they're closer.
I guess so.
Yeah, there's a lot of British. They come down, you know, for a quick popover. So, most likely time to see prostitutes with Dutch patrons. You won't know this. It's Monday.
Sunday afternoon.
Monday morning. Most businesses and shops are closed on Monday mornings in Amsterdam. Okay, so here we go. This is a yes or no question. Do the prostitutes pay taxes?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, they do. Are condoms required by law?
Yes.
Joe?
No.
No, Joey's right. But it's virtually impossible to find a prostitute who will work without
what
one.
What do? What the hell's the difference?
Well, it's not the law. Okay. Are is there a union?
No.
Yes.
Yes, there is. Are medical checkups required?
Yes.
Yes.
The answer is no.
Yeah, there's nothing required here.
And so here's a good one. Is pimping legal?
No.
No.
No, right. Is trafficking in prostitutes legal?
Yes.
No.
No. The answer is...
Wait, you can't import girls from other places?
No. Nope. They have to be on their own, I guess.
But so, like, what if you want some hottie in your window to make your other shifts look better?
How do you know? But the girls represent themselves.
That means there's a pimp involved.
That's right.
I guess there's a pimp anyway because you're renting the storefront.
No, that's a landlord.
Exactly. So why wouldn't the landlord like to, you know, spruce up the real estate by saying...
No.
Hey, honey, why don't you come over here and have some sex with people?
No. He doesn't get any money from the job. He just gets rent.
Well, no. If that girl's there for a few shifts, then the people come by again.
He doesn't get any gain on the fact that more people are coming
Correct.
By.
He
He's
gets
just got
rent.
A window.
He
I know, but it's not if you're increasing the foot traffic, you get more people down to your window.
Then your location's more valuable.
Exactly.
So as a landlord.
Okay, okay.
Exactly. So you want to increase the value. But so why wouldn't you bring in the hottie?
He doesn't bring in anybody. They bring themselves.
The big boobs.
Can I finish?
La.
Are accommodations made if a patron can't perform?
No.
No, they gotta
get the hell out the door.
Exactly. No, the answer is no. Okay, so.
How is that your. What are you kidding me? Money up front. You can't make it happen. That's your own damn fault.
All right, here we go.
Truth.
What happens if a patron gets violent?
They go to jail?
No, it's legal to hit a hooker.
it's not legal to hit anybody.
It's legal to hit a hooker, right?
Okay. So they're equipped. The quarters are equipped with a button that, when pressed, activates a light outside. And the offender had better hope that the police get there before the Hell's Angels do, they say.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't say that.
Yeah. Well, you just did.
That's right.
Okay.
Like
I got one more question. One more question. Why the red light?
I don't.
It's sexy.
Well, it's close.
Raise the red lantern. It's a Japanese reference. It's
no.
a Chinese reference.
No, he's...
Raise the red lantern.
It's flattering, especially when used in combination with a black light. It makes teeth sparkle.
Shut up.
So wait, even as early as the 1300s, women carrying red lanterns met sailors near the port.
Raise the red lantern means you're getting lucky. Boom.
Yep, that's true. So that's it for Number Nuts this week. You guys were pretty knowledgeable about the red light district.
I partake in a few times.
Never been.
Thanks, man.
That's something I don't want to hear from my son. We're going to say goodbye, and we'll be back next week.